Hey, do you want to be like me and make podcasts that everyone loves? Yeah, you do. But chances are, you don't want to spend a bunch of money doing it. No worries. A solution exists. Spotify's got a platform that lets you make podcasts super easy, then distribute those podcasts everywhere, and you can even earn money doing it. All in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Also, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. I'm speaking from experience when I say that all those additional features like video podcasts, Q&As, polls, those are things you won't find for cheap elsewhere. But with Spotify for Podcasters, it's all totally free. No catch. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Thanks. We love you.
Sorry, go on. I have a question, but I'll wait.
God, she's already ruined it.
Sorry, I'm already messing it up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pretty Scary.
Pretty Scary Boo.
Ah!
Oh, wow.
Is that not good?
It's like you've never listened to the podcast or something before.
If this is going to be released on Halloween.
I haven't listened to the podcast yet.
Then actually, that wasn't bad.
Oh, yeah. I guess you did as well as can be expected. That's Kat Reinhart.
Hi.
Comedian.
Documentary
friend,
filmmaker.
Correct. Director.
Kat Reinhart.
Producer. Writer. What don't you do?
Friend.
Listen to podcasts.
Listen to this specific podcast.
Well, no, I'm not a big, I Uber to work. Oh God. Mm-hmm. I sound like the 1%, don't I? It's a $6 Uber. But
my driver picks me up. It's a different driver every day. But
so I Uber to my freelance job as an editor. I Uber there, so I don't drive much. I don't have a car. Mm-hmm. So that's like when most people listen to podcasts. So
I would agree.
I miss the
that makes sense.
Listen to podcasts like I should because I don't have that commute opportunity.
So we had friend of the podcast, Ed Galvez, on for when we were talking about people dying in, what was it, Puerto Rico?
The Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh. Wow, Carrie.
And we did talk a little bit about your wedding. Your wedding was a lot of fun.
Oh my God. What episode? I have to go listen to this.
The one about the Dominican Republic.
Well, like a number. Wow. All right. Yeah. You're right. Okay.
It's okay. I'll text it.
Yeah,
to
text
you.
Me to
Dominican
okay.
Republic.
All right, cool. Awesome. Wow, my wedding. So my wedding is famous.
It is. You're famous on the Unpops Network. Good friend of the show. You've been on the Unpopular Opinion podcast.
I have. I used
told to- a very fun story about going through an exorcism once.
Yes. I loved coming and doing Unpops. And I'd usually come with Maria yes. Shahata, the wonderful comedian extraordinaire.
We love Maria.
Love Maria. She can't come on the podcast anymore because she lives in the UK now.
She's been deported to England,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, she's not allowed back in the States.
First, she left me.
First time I did comedy on the road was with Kat and Maria and Jeff May. We did a show in Albuquerque.
Yes, that was a super... what I remember is Jeff bringing like really good donuts.
Yeah, and texting and driving the entire time. Like Maria would post something to Facebook from the back seat and like 3 seconds later, Jeff May liked this. It's like, what are you doing?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Talk about Uber drivers.
Yeah.
And then
he had the skill set.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last time I saw you was a barbecue at your brother's house.
Did you come to one of those?
4th of July. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been like 2015, probably.
Was it at his house or was it in like a field?
In the middle of a field. There was a school bus.
an abandoned school bus. It was.
Yeah. Oh, I think that was. I think that was. Was that in Boyle Heights?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. There was like an article written about that night because the neighbors complained, and then he had a shipping container, and then the city like got mad at him for the shipping container and made him move it. And, there's all this drama. So the next year he had a party, but it was like not there. It was at a different location.
The time I saw you before that was, as it turns out, featured in this documentary.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Documentary What's Eating Ralphie May, which I watched this morning. I am so proud of you. It's so good.
I know. It is.
You did
really
such
good.
A great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a lot of work. Is it okay that we're... So the film's not like, we don't have a distributor yet. We just played a couple festivals, and now we're trying to figure out a good home for it.
I guess thank you for tuning in, everyone. That's our episode.
But I feel I mean, like, hopefully people will be like, cool, I'll look for that when it comes out. But you can't watch it yet.
We can talk about
the documentary.
You've seen it.
I saw the screening, and then I watched it again in parts over the last couple of days because it's heavy.
It is very heavy.
The only thing heavier than that was dealing with Maria Shahada at your wedding.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I heard those stories.
Spiral Squad.
Yeah.
At one point, and we were in the middle of nowhere, and she orders a pizza, and they have one Uber driver. His name is Sheldon. And
Blairsville, Georgia.
And he would also deliver pizzas. And he got lost. And so Tony Tallarico was trying to, like, give him directions. And by the way, Ed, Maria, and I had rented a cabin with one room for three people. Tony got a cabin with four rooms for just him. So we just stayed at his cabin and paid him $0 for his politeness and his kindness. Yeah. And his place had a jacuzzi too, which I love. Yeah. But Maria at some point ordered one pizza
just for her
for $17, but then sent us, I believe, Venmo requests the next day saying that we all owed her $45 each.
Wait, what?
It was a weird pizza Ponzi scheme.
Oh, my God.
So let's talk about the documentary.
Okay. Oh, can I ask my question?
Yes.
And I'm sorry. I guess this would have... I apologize, by the way, for not listening to Pretty Scary.
Oh,
I should have done my research.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm going to listen to all the episodes after... Actually, on the drive.
Yeah, listen to them all
anyway,
on the drive.
So I thought... I didn't realize I was doing Pretty Scary. I thought I was doing Pretty Carrie, because this is pretty...
About Mariah Carey?
Yeah. I don't know. But because Pretty Scary, this is a podcast about scary, like, murder and scary movies and stuff, right?
Sometimes.
Anything that's pretty scary in the world. And I would say this obesity film and addiction.
Okay, is scary. Got it. I was just curious to tie in. But congratulations, by the way. I just saw you post, you got a great write-up about Pretty Scary.
Yeah, we had two this month. You should get a lot around Halloween. Yeah.
Shout out to the Providence Journal. I'm assuming that's Providence, Rhode Island.
The other one was a Newswheel. And that was a couple of weeks ago.
But there was one podcast that was like the best murders of 2019.
We just did that one.
That was us.
Nipsey Russell.
That's amazing. So I've got a
Nipsey Hussle.
God damn it. More like a Nipsey Russell in my defense.
That's right up my alley. I'm going to have to check that one out, because I was like, that sounds like an amazing podcast episode. Like, our favorite murders of 2019. I love that.
No, it's a real knee slapper.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, funny stuff.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's probably not funny. It sounds like a great podcast. So thank you so much for having me on. I'm stoked.
Thank you for doing it. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking forward to the tie-in of how this is scary. I mean, it was...
We're going to murder you at the end of this.
Oh, right. Hey, whatever it takes.
And then our fans solve the crime.
Oh, that's good.
Find Kat Reinhart.
That's good.
Oh, we should bury her and just give coordinates.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That is good. But there were like parts of the documentary when I was filming that were very scary. I told you, Carrie, I'm like, I don't know if you know this, but there's basically halfway through the film, there's a really dark moment, or not, I don't know if I would call it a moment. There's a dark sequence of events. And randomly, coincidentally, Adam was like there that night. He showed up later, like at the venue. But basically,
that's so Adam. Tardy from the party.
There's just like, there was like a lot of drama that went down.
I wanted to miss it. Thank you.
with Lana and Ralphie, that happens in the film. And it's pretty like messed up what happens. And then Adam like showed up that later, like at this venue in Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm like, Carrie, I don't know if you know this, but like Adam was there that night. I don't know if he told you that. And,
Because I recorded with Adam last week and I was like, do you remember? Kat was asking if you remember being there. And he goes, I actually do. And then he told me his version. And this was before he had watched the documentary. So that had to be almost like a sense of vertigo to watch it and be like, wow, I was there for at least the aftermath.
Yeah, you were there for the aftermath.
Before we get into it, though, do you want to kind of explain, because so that people who think that Ralphie Mae is fluffy, he's not. They're two very separate comedians. Give a little background maybe of to who Ralphie Mae and Lana Turner is and how you got involved in the project.
Sure. So Ralphie Mae was a hilarious stand-up comedian. I would say a icon in comedy. He did stand-up for over 25 years and... he was just a workhorse. He toured nonstop. I think he's one of the busiest comedians, touring all the time. He loved his fans. Just really funny, really great dude. And he unfortunately passed away it's been 2 years now. But and then his wife, Lana Turner, is also a stand-up comedian. She's a guitar comic. And Ralphie and Lana met when they were both comics, like doing like the open mic scene in Houston, Texas. And then Ralphie moved to LA and then Lana moved. And I think they were just friends then, but eventually they fell in love and got married, had two children. And then they would tour together. Sometimes she would open for him, kind of this like traveling band, bring the two kids on the tour bus. They were together for over 16 years. And I was actually producing their podcast. Ralphie and Lana had a podcast called Perfect 10. And I got a job kind of through a random series of events because of my web series. And I was producing, like recording and editing their Perfect 10 podcast for about a year. And then we were making like other short videos. And then Lana saw this documentary I had made years ago when I lived in New York called Trashed Nation. Can never say it right. Trashed. TRASHED. Trashed Nation.
Just a timeout. Adam and I are spelling bee champions, and we were both actually on TV in grade school. So yeah, not really? Spelling anything. Both.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Televised.
Okay.
Televised.
No, spelling what? Are you serious?
Bee. Yeah, and we're both from the same city, Peoria, Illinois.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Coincidences abound on this episode.
In the same room at a spelling
bee? No, we were different years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We were nerds in different years.
Got it. Okay. All right. This is very cool.
Which actually seems unlikely because we're the same age. I mean, I'm significantly older than you, but we are the same age.
Yeah, at least 3 months?
3 to 4 months, correct. Yes. So
it's unknown. Like
it might have been the same year. Who knows? Yeah.
It's unknown. I love it.
Trash Nation.
Trash Nation. Yeah, I was a decent speller too when I was in elementary school, but not, I never got to go on TV. But anyway, so Lana's. I'd made this documentary about food waste, and I was like living. I had done this like Super Size Me thing where I lived off of food from the trash for a month, and like made this documentary. I didn't really know what I was doing, and I put it on my like YouTube page, and Lana like stumbled on it one night. I didn't send it to her. I didn't like. I wasn't advertising it, but.
Well, you did a lot with Maria, and your web series was My Super Overactive Imagination, which was very popular for a while.
Spell it.
Which kidding. Part? The entire thing.
I'm kidding. Yeah, you know, I don't know. Maria and I are still like, why didn't more cool stuff happen because of My Super Overactive Imagination? We loved making that. That was so fun. And we still like text each other often being like, when are we going to make more episodes? Like, when are we going to like... get the band back together and do more. I loved that. It was like nothing more fun. It's interesting to go back and watch them now though, because I think they're really funny, but also like the production value is pretty bad, and like a lot of the camera angles are bad, and the editing, which I did, is not that good. And because you grow so much, so it's like I look at it now and I'm like oof. But I still think they're writing. I still think they're really funny. They're just not shot that well. So I would love to get to make more with her and have a better like production value, but anyway, yeah. So Lana saw this documentary I had made, and she was like, so she called me the next day after she watched the doc, and she said, "What do you want to do with your life?" And that was such a cool question to be asked from someone besides my mother. Mm-hmm. Because it was someone who actually was in like a position to like accommodate my wishes.
Right. Versus possibly tear them down to become Facebook fodder. Right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I said, I want to make movies and do stand up. And she said, okay, well, Ralphie's going to get weight loss surgery this summer. Did I mention that Ralphie was obese?
You did, but this would have been Ralphie's second because he had already had gastric bypass yes. when he was 800 pounds.
Yeah, he had had a gastric bypass years ago in like early 2000s, and he lost 300 pounds, but he basically plateaued at 500. So he was always around 500 pounds. So he was going to have weight loss surgery that summer, not another gastric bypass. This time he was going to have lap band surgery. Alana was like, Rafi's going to have lap band surgery. Why don't you come on the road, film, like, basically make a weight loss documentary about Ralphie, film, like, the life before, and then film the surgery, and then film the life after, and make this, like, inspiring weight loss film. And then you can open for Ralphie and do, like, 10 minutes up top. So, like, here you go. Like, stand up in a movie. I was like, wow. Like, holy shit. This is amazing. And so I was like, yeah, let's, absolutely. And I didn't think that a weight loss film was that interesting, but it was such a cool opportunity that I took it. And also, like, what's great about documentaries is you can start off with thinking you're going to make one thing, and usually, like, there's something else will, like, you kind of find the story along the way. If you're making Verite, that rhymed. you're welcome. So I was like, I'll make a weight loss film, but I'm going to look for a more interesting angle because there's a million weight loss films already. So that's not the interesting one. But I thought it was interesting that they toured together as a family and maybe. So I thought I would like explore that angle and that would be the story. And so I'm out on the road filming this documentary and I don't know how much of it I want to spoil, but but basically like things fall apart. And there was one night in particular that where everything came to a head. And it was just a really crazy night, a really big fight between Lana and Ralphie. And we were in Wisconsin, in Madison, Wisconsin. They had some shows there. And Lana ended up leaving with the kids. And then I went back to Nashville after with Ralphie. He canceled the rest of his tour. It was like a really kind of like just crazy time, but Adam was there that night.
Yeah. The night in Madison, I had only been doing comedy a couple years at that point. So I was really excited to just like meet Ralphie May and just be in that like environment or in those circumstances and just see what it was like. And, I knew Lana from, I think she did, I used to do a live show at Westside Comedy Theater, and I think that's where I initially met Lana.
We had you come on the podcast.
I was on.
We ate bugs.
That's right. Yes, I ate bugs on Lana. On Lana Turner's podcast.
On the Perfect 10 podcast.
Yeah.
I think I had you come on as a guest.
Right. That is how I met her.
I was producing the podcast and you would have Marie and I come on Unpops and I loved it. And I was like, and you had a following.
Oh, so I forgot about that. Yeah.
I was like, Lana, this guy is funny. He has a nice following. Let's have him on Perfect 10.
Oh, she tricked me into that. Cause she was like,
a slug?
Well, shit. No, thankfully not a slug.
They'll kill you.
Yeah. Don't ever eat a banana slug.
Copy that.
She was like, we want to talk about something that you haven't talked about on your podcast. And I was like, well, I'm pretty terrified of bugs and I haven't ever talked about that. And she was like, oh, let's go eat bugs.
Yeah, that's Lana.
And we went to Typhoon, which is a restaurant in Santa Monica by the Santa Monica Airport.
Yep.
That has been shut down a couple times for serving endangered animals.
Perfect.
But they also have bugs on their menu. And we ate shrimp toast that had scorpion on it, which was, I just don't like shrimp toast, so that was bad for me. But the worst thing was the mealworms. The waiter, she asked the waiter to describe them, and he said they're kind of grainy inside, and I almost vomited right away. They were very bad. That's how I met Lana. I ate bugs. And then she was on my podcast a few times. We kept in touch. And I was doing a show in Chicago with Alex Schmidt when you were in Madison. Mm-hmm. And me and Lana were texting back and forth, and I was going to come out to the show. And I get to the show, and I was outside smoking a cigarette, and I was looking down at my phone, and Ralphie walked by. I knew Ralphie May had walked by. I could just tell. I didn't even see him. And then looked up, and I see, yep, there's Ralphie, and then here comes Lana. And I could tell right away something was off. And that was, like, when Lana walked past, that was the only time I actually saw her those two nights. And I think she left. That's in the documentary. I think she left that night.
I'm trying to remember if she actually left that night. She left the show. She was supposed to open for Ralphie.
Right.
And we made it to the show, there was a while where that was even in question. We made it to the show, and then she left. They continued their fight that had started back at on the bus at the hotel and in the green room. And then she left, and Ralphie actually later said he fired her. So I don't.
Can you fire your wife?
I guess so. I mean, she was weird. She was his opener. So he was like, I fired her, and I've never had to fire anyone. And I'm like, okay. But so he fired her. So she left and did not open for him that night, which I don't even know. Maybe we didn't even need an opener at that point though, because the show started so late.
There were like local openers.
Yeah. I think this whole time they were having people perform to kind of like stall basically because we were really late.
Yeah.
So she left and went, so her and the kids went back to LA, and I don't think they were able to fly out that night because it was so late. I think they flew out the next morning.
Yeah. And I went to the show the second night, Saturday, and that was the night, I don't remember. I was either with Evan or the trainer. What I don't remember his name.
Evan's Ralphie's tour manager.
Right.
And then the trainer is Michael Ramos.
Michael Ramos. I think I was with Michael, and we were going, the green room was like inside a bank or something weird, and you had to go up an elevator, and then there was this like waiting area, and then the green room was there, and I was going up with Michael, and I think it was Evan who came out of the green room, and because I was looking for you, mm-hmm. and I think it was Evan who came out of the green room and was like, don't go in there. And I just remember sitting out there knowing you were in there with Ralphie, and we could kind of hear like yelling, but
oh my god.
And yes. I wasn't sure if that was gonna be, because I like, we couldn't hear what was being said, but it sounded really intense.
I forgot about that. So that was, yeah, so Lana and the kids had left that morning, and then we went and did, he had another show that night,
right?
And then after the show, because I was like not really sure my place anymore, because I'm there to film a documentary. I'm there to film a weight loss documentary, but like their marriage is imploding.
Right.
So I'm like, I don't really know like what to do. I don't even think I had my camera that night. I didn't even bring it to the show because I was like, this doesn't seem like an appropriate time to be filming. Lana's gone and like Ralphie's like in the middle of this like crisis. And but so after the show, he was like, hey, let's talk. And he pulled me into the, so we went into the green room and we sat at the table in there. And he was like, do you want to keep filming? And I said, yes, I'd love to, as long as like, you know, you'll have me here. And he said, okay. So he was like, yeah, I'll tell Aaron, who's his assistant, to cancel your flight, because I think they got me a flight back to LA. And he was like, you can come. I've canceled my shows, though. I'm going back to Nashville, like, tomorrow on the bus. Like, come with us. Which is where, so I went back on the bus. So we took the bus back to Nashville, and I was just, like, in Nashville, like, and that's when I got that interview. The interview, there's, like, basically one main interview of Ralphie that runs throughout right. the film. That was when I got that interview. But he kind of, yeah, that was really weird. Like we ended up talking for like probably an hour.
Yeah, it was a long time.
And I forgot you were waiting, and I felt kind of bad because I'm like, but and then he got a little. Sometimes he would like get really excited and yell.
Yeah,
and he would like slap. He would like slam his hand on the table and yell, and he was like, he would kind of go off on all this. Like he was just in like a really weird. I don't know. I'm not a doctor or a therapist, but that was an interesting, you know what, and then at one point he started like shaking, like physically, like having like a physical, and I'm like, are you okay? Like, do you need something to eat? And he was, there was like a clementine orange and he started like eating that. And, but he like couldn't get it open because he was shaking so much. And like he ate that and that like helped him to keep from shaking. But
blood sugar probably.
You know, what's really interesting about that is it, so I didn't have my camera and I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? I actually pulled out my phone and recorded that conversation. I think I even told him. I think I was even like, I'm going to record this. And so I just hit record. And so there's actually audio of that entire conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never listened to it.
Yeah, it was. I remember waiting and just like thinking like, what was he going to be like when he came out? Like, this feels tense. And I didn't really have, I don't remember why, but I had to wait. Like, I was waiting for you. I think we were going to like have a drink or something. I don't know. And I remember being like, this is going to be weird when he comes out. And he was the nicest person, one of the nicest people I've ever met. He was so like, you would not have known anything was wrong at all.
So the night before, because it's like, well, it's a little confusing because it's two nights. So the first night he blew by you, Lana's there, they're fighting.
Right.
And then like Lana leaves and there is, that was like a kind of weird, like purgatory day. But then that night, but then he did his show that night. And then afterwards, who he was like yelling and really intense when we were having our conversation, but it wasn't like at me. It was like, he actually went off on this tangent about how like Lana like has never been given a fair shake as a comedian because she's pretty and a guitar comic. And so he's like,
and he fired her,
even though, right. And he fired her, even though they were like fighting, he was still like standing up for her. And he, and then he was like, you know, the conversation started cause he was like, do you want to keep filming? And like, he allowed me that, he let me keep filming. Even though I wasn't like, I didn't film that, but so it was like, it was this like nice, like good conversation, but it did get really intense sometimes. Like he was kind of all over the place, emotionally, but he was just, he was going through so much, But then he couldn't have been like, I mean, he was always like lovely to me. He couldn't have been nicer. They, you know, he had like, him and Lana had their issues and I think I understand some of it. I mean, I think she kind of like pushed him in a direction that he didn't really want to go. And I think that, and I understand why she was pushing him because she was trying to keep him alive.
Right.
And, but he, I think, was
like even the weed thing, I think people would see someone getting upset about someone using weed in the 2010s and be like, what is the problem? But if it's someone who's also chronically overeating,
yeah,
weed is the last thing you want them.
Right. I think she just taking. Wanted, yeah, she didn't want him taking anything. And I can understand that. That's her husband, the father of her two children. He'd had a pulmonary embolism years before where he almost died. So she had kind of seen what that looked like, and now she's like terrified and trying to keep him alive. But he had, you know, that's a lot to take on to face that fight.
Well, she also was essentially a single mother. He was gone.
He was gone all the time. Yeah,
and he talks about, we have the LA home, the Nashville home. I don't really know where I fit. He's on the road so much. The kids loved and missed him. And one of my favorite parts of the documentary was them watching their parents on stage.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it was so cute. And especially when his son was like, go dad. Like, yeah. It was so cute.
Yeah.
But for me, I thought, and so I went to the screening and Dr. Drew was there because anytime you bring up addiction, he magically appears.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he was there and he seems very lovely. But he did the Q&A after, and he even said, and it wasn't addressed in the documentary, and it was something that I hadn't thought of because she was with him almost two decades. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know, she was trying to help him, and she was going to Al-Anon and trying to figure out how to help him, whether she was respecting those boundaries or not. But he goes, you know, she was codependent at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, while she was like, oh, he needs my help, I'm trying to help him, he's my friend. And he mentioned like, oh, she got codependent. Something in the documentary that stuck in my mind, and I remember thinking it again today when I rewatched it, is it's so interesting for people to say like, okay, you're an addict if you drink or do drugs or do whatever, but food is an addiction as well. It's anything. Like, I think, you know, my mom is addicted to shopping at Kohl's. Like, it's like people all have their things that they're addicted to. And I do remember being with this comic and we were having lunch, and I think I was hungover from partying the night before. And he's like, Carrie, do you think you drink too much? And literally at that moment, he looks over and he sees a can of Coca-Cola and he goes, I love Coke. And his eyes lit up. He goes, I could have six and like, you know, like at a sitting. And I was like, I don't know that your addiction with sugar is any different than my addiction with alcohol or whatever it might be. Yeah. And there was a scene where Ralphie's talking to the owner of one of the clubs and the owner's like, oh, like, do you drink? And he goes, man, no, man, that will kill you. And it's so funny because I, again, as an addict of, you know, drinking, and I remember my own battles with cocaine, you hide it and you protect your addiction because I think there's shame in it. And, you know, so it was interesting for me to hear him say like alcohol will kill you, but it's like the fact that you are morbidly obese, like he would hang his hat on the fact that he didn't have diabetes yet.
Yeah.
He just thought he was deficient in vitamins B and D and he was proud of himself. And I think at that point he called off the lap band surgery.
Yeah, he did. So he did. Yeah, I guess I haven't. So that he did cancel the surgery. They called it off. And that was, you know, that's addressed in the film briefly when that happens. But that had happened like a little bit before Wisconsin. So, you know, things were kind of like, it's like, oh, where do we go now? But it was all very like, what film am I now making if he's not even going to have the surgery? So that was like, let's figure out a different way for him to lose weight. But he did. I remember one time Lana saying, it's not in the film, but because Ralphie didn't like being called an addict. And Lana would say that a lot. And I, you know, I'm not going to diagnose Ralphie, but that's in like, and I, the film for me is just like, here's, it's just like cinema verite of like, here's, I just present what happened and then let like the viewer just, you know, make that decision for themselves. And Lana is obviously very opinionated on what was happening and that's, she has every right to do that. And it's, I don't just, you know, I'm not like disagreeing with anything that she says. She's probably right. But one thing that she did say that's not actually in the film was, she was like, Ralphie says he's not an addict, but he wears his addiction. And that was like, so interesting. It's like, yeah, I mean, how can you say that you're not an addict when you're 500 pounds? Like,
yeah,
there's something to that.
But also saying you want help, but then not doing anything to help it, you know, for alcohol or drugs or whatever, you can go to rehab. I remember seeing him. It was the first time I'd ever heard of Ralphie May, who was watching Celebrity Fit Club. And I think he was dating Lana then, because I was like, oh my God, his girlfriend's gorgeous. Like, how does, you know, not to be superficial, but like, how does that work? And then later on they got married, but that's how I'd first heard of Ralphie May. And I think he quit Celebrity Fit Club. He didn't want to commit.
You know what's funny? I combed the internet for months trying to find Celebrity Fit Club. I couldn't find it. And I had like a ton of like old stuff on like Lana and Ralphie had like a collection of like all kinds of like Lana and Ralphie like home videos and stand up and even like Last Comic Standing, which is how Ralphie really became like best known, was losing Last Comic Standing. Was losing,
which is insane.
Which is actually legitimately crazy.
And I do appreciate that he wasn't cordial about that. There's a point in the documentary where he's like, yeah, that time I got fucked on Last Comic Standing. He really did. That was absurd. And I have seen them both do stand up since then. And I stand by it.
You don't hear much about Dat Fan.
He was one of the first, when I moved to LA, he was one of the first comics I saw live. And I was like, I made a mistake. Should just go back to the Midwest.
I thought you were going to say, I made a mistake voting for him. Just moving here. You know what's so funny? Like years ago when I was living in New York, going to film school, I remember like where I was, the apartment that I was in with like my then boyfriend, watching Ralphie on Last Comic Standing. And he had this like hilarious joke, like that was like, do you know how long it takes me to take my shoes off at the airport? Light them up. Like about like the Iraq War. And that was in probably like, I mean, that was so long ago. I wasn't interested in comedy then. Like, I didn't know his name, but I remember like sitting there thinking like, that is the fun. It was so funny. And that stuck with me for years. And then years go by, I'm living in LA, like getting like, you know, doing comedy and making film stuff. And I met Lana and Ralphie and I was like, are you the one who had this joke on Last Comic Standing about the, how long does it take me to take my shoes off at the airport? And he was, and it's like it's in What's Eating Ralphie. It's in the film. And it's just such a weird, like, but yeah, I mean like, I remember like Ed will have this thing where I'll be like, oh, such and such, they're a funny comedian and they're funny. And Ed will always say, tell me one of their jokes. Cause, and that's like, that's so smart. Cause sometimes I can't, and I'm like, I don't know. And it's like, if they're that funny, like there's something they've said that sticks with you. Mm-hmm. And like Ralphie was so funny that he said something on TV that I saw in like 2007 or whatever year that was, and stuck with me for like over a decade.
Yeah.
That's a good comic.
Well, when the Madison show, he did a joke about Malaysia Airlines that is one of my favorite jokes ever. He was like, they should just rebrand. Their slogan should be Malaysia Airlines. We make reefs.
That's funny.
That's a great fucking joke.
Yeah. He is so funny. I mean, I love just watching him. It was like an honor to get. I basically was on the road filming off and on for about a year. I got to spend months on the road, and he would every city we went to, the first 10, 15 minutes, he'd just riffed on the city we were in, and he'd been there 100 times before, and he knew all the little inside jokes and like of the town, and people just loved it. And then so he would do 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then afterwards he would just hang and like do meet and greets with the fans and like, you know, make time to take pictures with everybody. Just like, good dude.
He had Chad open for him a lot, right? Because there's twins, Corey and Chad.
Yes.
Who I don't know if Corey went on the road with him. I know I saw Chad in the documentary.
So Corey and Chad were his openers a lot. But while I was filming, Corey was opening for who's the guy who's like the big joke thief?
Carlos Mencia.
Yeah, thank you. Is that okay to?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's he going to do?
I mean, everybody.
If you listen to the podcast, you know you're fine.
I mean, everybody knows that, right?
Yeah, that's you can Google that.
So he was, I want to say that's who he was opening for. So he was opening for Carlos Mencia. And like, I think I kind of like hurt Ralphie's feelings a little bit because he was like, Corey's not, because Ralphie at one point was like, yeah, I booked both of them. But just one of them's here. That's a really bad. Well, that was a terrible. I won't try any more accents. I apologize. But Chad was like awesome. We had such a great time. Really fun dude. Him and Evan were like, it was just like Evan, the tour manager. We made a nice. It was cool. It was great being on the road with him, and Chad would open for him, and he's in the film just for like a second in like really one scene, because there was another really funny scene that I took out because. Chad, like, it's weird. I saw Chad at the memorial, and afterwards I was like, hey, you know, I want to show you the film. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, and like tell me if you think it's like honest and fair to Ralphie, which has like been my goal the whole time. And he was like, yeah, I'm down, and I text him, and like I sent him like an outtake that he thought was funny of like them on the bus telling a funny story, and then we were like trying to, I kept on being like, he wanted me
was
to.
Was that
like,
the Tim Horton outtake?
The Tim Hortons. Yeah. I love that. I'm going to like put it somewhere. They just tell this funny story about Tim Hortons donuts, and it's really cute. And, but anyway, so I'm like, I was trying to arrange a time for like, for me to show him the film. He wanted me to send it to him like a link. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. But like come to the screening, and then he couldn't, and he lives kind of outside LA, and I was trying to arrange a time for him to see it, and I'm like texting him, and then he just like stops responding, and I sent him this long text that was like, hey, like, you know, I really want you to see this, I want to know that like you're okay with everything that's happening, and like et cetera, and like he just like didn't write me back. And then like right before the Nashville premiere, there's this journalist that's like, yeah, the twins are saying that they didn't know they were being filmed. They don't want to be in the documentary.
Didn't they have to sign like an NDA or?
No, they didn't sign anything.
Okay.
It's helpful if you do sign, but there's
It wouldn't be an NDA. What would it be?
A release. Consent, a release. Yeah. Just a release.
Okay.
They didn't sign a release. I asked them to, and they were like, no. But they didn't sign a release. But if you're, we have like an amazing attorney that did all like our fair use and legal stuff, and we asked him about that, and he was like, if you're aware you're being filmed, then it's implied consent, and they're very clearly. I mean, he's very clearly aware he's being filmed. He's telling me stories. And
I was going to say, how would he not know? There was a part where, because Ralphie did the entire documentary, he looked tired.
He really did.
And he slept a lot. And he was very sedentary. And I know that was the one thing that the personal trainer that was brought in was like, I don't need to go crazy with this diet. I don't need to have him, you know, do a million exercises. If I can just get him up and walking.
Yeah. At one point he's like, there's a putt-putt golf place close to here. Yeah. And I've been there and it's great.
Oh. Right.
Really missed out.
No. But he did. There's times when he looked sick on stage because he was always sitting. Rafi was always sitting. And at one point, you know, he has to get up and Chad takes in. I remember seeing Corey and Chad when I first started comedy. I would go to as many shows as I could. I just like loved it. I was trying to absorb it. And I don't know. I want to say it was like in Pomona. Like it was kind of like a rough town. It was a rough crowd. And apparently at some point, Corey and Chad had maybe been to prison or spent some time in prison, but they were so funny because they were doing stand up together on stage and they were like looking out. They're like, dude, are we back in the yard? Like, I feel like we're back in the yard. Like, look at this crowd. And I was like, they're so funny. And it was great seeing that they got the opportunity to open with Ralphie. And I really enjoyed that part, is watching the stand up clips, because I hadn't really watched Ralphie or Lana's. And I didn't really know what happened to Corey and Chad as far as, you know, following their stand-up, because so many people tour. But it was great seeing those clips, and it did. I started Googling them after the documentary.
Yeah, I mean, Ralphie loved them. They loved Ralphie, and they opened for Ralphie a lot for a long time. And but I don't know. I mean, I didn't really know Corey. I'd get to know Corey that well because he really wasn't on the road when I was filming like Chad was. But I really liked Chad, and I just thought the world of him, and I thought we were cool. And but I don't know anymore. Cause now they're like, it seems like I haven't seen this reporter was like showing me like stuff they had posted, but it seems like they're basically like saying they don't want to be in the film and they're really pissed off about the film. And I was like really surprised to find that out, because I'm like, well, I've been texting Chad and here's me saying you're in the film, Corey's not. And Chad says, okay.
What do you think their gripe would be with the film?
I think the issue is that it's that Ralphie's camp hates Lana. So when Lana and Ralphie got divorced, like the people basically like, you know, everyone split, like, so all, so like the, you know, the twins and like other people who like know and love Ralphie just don't like Lana. And that's well within their right. But I think that they think there's this assumption that Lana made this film and that it's basically like her shitting on Ralphie and then Ralphie can't do anything about it. And they can't do anything about it because Ralphie's not here anymore. But that's like, can't be further from the truth. Like, I made the film. Lana didn't. Lana didn't even see the film until I did my first like 85 minute cut. And she was like very hands off and like, let me, and she doesn't always look good in the film. And she was like, I look crazy. And I had to be like, no, you don't. So like, to her credit, she's been very just, she's let me like tell the story honestly. And, but I had been working on it for a while. I was doing cuts and like, I was working on it before. So I even submitted it as a work in progress of festivals before Ralphie died. So I think that because it took me so long to finish the film, because I was working on it in my spare time, there was no like money, no funding or anything. I was just like working on my own, on my own time, on my own dime. Like by the time there was like a cut to show, Ralphie, and then basically like I had been working on it and then Ralphie died. So I went back and shot an epilogue and then continued working on the film. But so now the film's coming out and it's just been so long. I think people think that Ralphie died, and then we were like, oh, let's make this film shitting on Ralphie now that he's no longer here. And that's not what happened. But they also haven't seen the film. So there are people who are like pissed off about the film and like and talking shit about it online. And I'm just welcome them to watch the film and then tell me if they have an issue with it. Because I think what they think the film is not what the film is. But I understand their concern.
I would agree. I think, I'm not sure exactly when you started filming, but I moved to LA in October 2015. My very first weekend, you and I went to Hooters downtown LA.
Oh my God.
I had little 187 milliliter bottles of Gallo wine.
That was a great night.
You were, I think, looking for a producer for Brand New Old Love?
Yes. We were going to a screening of another film.
Yes.
Brand New Old Love's producer, Jim Warrick, is amazing. He had made a film he had made before mine. They did a screening.
Mm-hmm.
So I went.
And I was coming from work and I didn't make it in time. So I go, well, when you're done, I'll be at the Hooters across the street. Got to the screening. So you brought Jim over. So we hung out at Hooters and then we went to LACMA because they had music and summer on summer nights.
With our Hooters.
With our Hooters to go.
We got food to go. That might be the only time that Hooters has been in the presence of LACMA.
My guess, yes. But I remember you talking about the documentary then, and because I had done a show with Lana at the Gas Lamp in Long Beach when I was still pretty new. She headlined, so that was probably 7 years ago. And after the screening of the documentary, I actually, because we're Facebook friends, in whatever whatever capacity that means, I sent her a message and I was like, hey, I watched the documentary. Like that was, it was a lot more intense and heavy than I had anticipated it being. And I was just like, you know, I hope, you know, I wish the best for you and your family. She actually wrote me back this morning. It was very sweet. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember the Gas Lamp. That was so long ago. I hope we can do a show again soon. Thank you for the kind words. This unraveled completely differently than I thought it was going to. Yep. I appreciate this, you know, the support. But I remember talking to you, the phone call, the voicemail that she, that Lana leaves you and you air it.
Yeah. Oof. She, okay. She, I asked her permission.
Of course. When Ralphie died and, and also watching the timeline, because you would do timelines of, it would be 2013 or, you know, whatever year within 5 years with his health, technically he should die. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. He died within those 5 years.
He did,
So, but hearing that voicemail was gut wrench. I think I started crying at that point.
Yeah, the voicemail was really intense. So I shot off and on for a year in 2015 and then like went and made Brand New Love. Cause like the filming got, like the film stopped when they split up.
For the second time.
For the second time. Yes. And then I went and made Brand New Love. And then I was like, you know, I think there's a story here with this film, even though it's not a weight loss documentary. I started thinking about everything that had happened. And I was like, I think this is a story about how you can't get someone to change. And so I started like editing. It's like hundreds of hours of footage. And I started editing. And then Ralphie passed in 2017. So then I went and shot more after that, like an epilogue. So filmed more in 2018. So it is like a long, and then there's like all this B-roll footage from like them when they were younger. So there, it spans a long period of time, but that voicemail was really intense. I actually didn't, I was in Virginia for a wedding the day Ralphie died and I didn't have cell reception. And we got to our Airbnb and I had all these, and my phone like comes back, like when I get reception again, I have all these text messages from people being like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, what? Like who died? And I start like, I actually first, and someone who I didn't know that well, just like from the, like a little bit of an acquaintance, like we had been like in a writing group together. She was like texting me, I'm so sorry. And I was like, if this person's texting me, I'm so sorry. Like, I mean, it actually was like, oh, I did my brother die? Because I was like, who would like, you know, who's somebody that like, if they died, it would show up on the news and then she would know it affected. It just like went to all these, I was just like losing my mind. So I called her and she was like, I'm so sorry to be the one to tell you this. You don't know. And I'm like, what's going on? And she's, Ralphie died. And I was like, I have to go. I need to call Lana right away. So I hung up with her and called Lana and she was just like understandably inconsolable. And then we got off a call and then later, like hours later, I look at my phone and I see that I had a voicemail from her and it's like, nine second long voicemail and it's at like 12:17 and I realized that like that's a voicemail from her when I didn't have cell reception yet and like it's, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't listen to this. And I just sat on my phone for like 2 months and then I finally like was like ready to listen to it and it was like it was as intense as I had assumed.
He had just been picked up for a year-long residency at Harrah's.
Yeah, he was well into his residency.
Oh, was he?
Okay. Yeah, his residency had started in January. He passed in October.
Oh, I thought it was
October.
Maybe I'm thinking of Adam's birthday. My apologies.
Oh, that's in March. Thank you. No worries. Yeah, all the most the whole documentary is interesting, but one of the craziest parts to me is you see Lana doing all of this stuff to try and like get him to fix his shit.
Yeah.
And then she goes on this radio show, the Man Cow show.
Yeah, in Chicago.
And
he's
like
rough.
This dude like gets in an argument with her and she says something about he's my best friend And at the end of the interview, he goes, and by the way, you're not his best friend. Let's go to commercial. It's like, Jesus Christ. People tune into this on the way to work?
It's like an amped up Howard Stern back in the day when he was like over the top.
There's That's no chairs. He's just pacing around.
But that was talked about at the screening. And Dr. Drew's like, no, Mancow is infamous for being an asshole. Like, that's what he does.
Is he?
And
she,
and Lon even said, because they were like, you handled it well. She goes, oh, no, he was a dick. Like, this guy was awful.
She was just, I think, used to, I mean, people were so mean to her a lot. And, but there's also in that same guy, it was like, it's your job to make sure that Ralphie doesn't die. Like, you need to get him healthy. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, he had,
which is a thing she hears a few times throughout this documentary.
Yeah. But the people, but it was, I mean, he had no idea what she had just gone through trying and how hard she had tried.
Well, 17 years of it.
Yeah. Right. And so, but he was just like, you need to be cooking healthier for him. And she's like, I'm trying. And, I remember feeling really badly for her that day. Cause I'm like, damn, like people really would like just give her shit all the time. They really do blame the partner.
Yeah.
They'll blame the partner a lot.
Well, I think they look at her too, because it's not like remember when Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold, like, were both fat together and then trying to lose weight together. Like, she was always in great shape. So I think she did get a lot of the blame. Like, well, you obviously know how to eat healthy. Right. Why aren't you helping him? But who knows what he's doing when he's on the road?
Right. And she did everything she could. But at the end of the day, it's like, you can't, it's like saying, oh, like, your child is addicted to like opioids. Like, why aren't you helping? Like, I think people don't take food issues as seriously as they take drug issues. Like we were kind of talking earlier. And so it's a bit unfair how,
and it's just as deadly.
But, I mean, it was, but if you watch like My 600 Pound Life, which is a guilty pleasure of mine, I love that show. There's always an enabler.
Right.
So there's always, cause like these people are like, are you all watching the show, My 600 Pound Life?
I've seen it.
Okay. I mean, it's like,
I can guess what it's about.
Yeah. we're busy spelling.
Every time there's always an enabler. There's like, sometimes these people are so obese, like they literally can't get out of bed, and their spouse, it's like a parent child, but usually a significant other who's cooking for them and bringing them food in bed, going and getting pizza and fast food and bringing it to them in bed. And they go see the doctor and the doctor's like, why are you doing this? And they're like, well, just to keep the peace, because they yell at me and they're so mean to me if I don't bring them this food. But there is always an enabler. So I think that it's like a safe assumption to be like, oh, that's the wife. She must be the enabler.
Right.
It's
clear from the documentary that she's not.
Right. Yeah. She tried very hard, but he did have other
vices.
There were other people in his life, but I don't know if I would call the other people in his life enablers, because they were his employees.
Yeah, there's an interview with someone. I don't remember who it is, but he's talking about
the Nashville assistant.
He's talking about picking up soda for Ralphie, and he's like, "Well, when Lana's there, I don't, because she would be upset. But like, when Lana's not there, he can't be Lana."
And he gets upset if I don't bring it.
Yeah, at that point, he's just Ralphie's employee.
Right. Like, that's the thing. Like this. Yeah, Ralphie is his boss.
Right.
His boss says, "Go to the store, get me soda." He can't say no. Ralphie could fire him. So that's, I don't think for a second that's enabling.
No.
I'm sure there's, I mean, different people can have opinions on that, but it's like, there was even a time we were somewhere and Ralphie was like, hey, will you go get me a Coke? And I'm like, yeah, okay. And so I'm there to film him having an addiction to Coke. But he's like, will you go grab me a Coke out of the green room? What am I supposed to say? No.
Right.
I don't want to piss him off. He's paying me to be there. Like, so like I went and got him a Coke. I did. I went and got him a Coke as soon as he asked.
You're not his best friend.
So I think that's an interesting dynamic. Like, that was interesting that he didn't have, I don't think he had enablers, but he also could like help himself. He was able to, he was mobile, but he did have employees and they did do whatever he asked, but like that was their, literally their job.
You can't blame them for that.
I don't think so. Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, he, what happened to him, like, he did it to himself. Like, there's not really, it doesn't seem like there's anyone to blame. And I don't know if there should be anyone. Like,
well, even
I think that's the common thing, is people always want to find someone to blame. And it's like, you know, some people are just broken.
And I mean,
they deal with things in a destructive way.
Right. I mean, it's not like, and Lana says this, like, who wants to be 500 pounds? He didn't want to be 500 pounds. He was in pain all the time. He was miserable. I mean, he loved being, I think he was really happy when he was on stage, but I think physically he was uncomfortable carrying around all that weight. I do think he was in pain. Like, and I, so like, obviously he didn't want to be like that. So of course there has to be something much bigger at play, or he would have just chosen to not be 500 pounds. So much, it's so much bigger.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to talk about too was his kids, April, May, and August, May.
April, June, May, and August, May. Aren't they so cute?
They are adorable and they have the biggest personalities. They were so fun to watch. I think almost without them in the film, like they made it more lighthearted, but they are so smart.
Really,
and
they
were, it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with their life, you know, creatively or whatever.
I think April would be a really good politician.
Okay.
Just from my experience.
You looked at me like I was going to debate you.
I think April should be a politician. They're both, I wouldn't be surprised if August got into comedy.
Agreed. Yeah. He was definitely a ham.
How are they doing after?
That's definitely more of a question for Lana.
Yeah.
But they seem to be doing really well. I mean, they have a great mom. Like Lana really does put in like so much time to like taking care of them. And they're in some like support groups for, I think, like children who've like lost a parent. And, they're growing, you know, Ralphie was on the road so much that like their day to day wasn't like drastically changed when he passed. Like they still go to the same school and Lana's still like kind of doing everything, that she was doing before. I mean, obviously a lot has changed, but I think that there wasn't this like jarring, change in their home, even though of course they lost their father. I'm thinking maybe helped something. I don't know, but she was asked that at both Q&As after our, LA and Nashville premieres. And she said they're doing well. She's a really good mom.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be okay because they have her.
Right. Yeah. It seems like it from the documentary. She does seem like a really good mom.
She was great. I was exhausted. Just following her and the kids around was like, I was like, I don't know if I could do this. Every single morning she was like up, like looking for like ways to like educate and keep them like educated and like entertain and learn something. She's always taking them on all this stuff. And like, but I was like, oh my God, where are we going now? Like, I was like, when it's just Ralphie, we just sleep all day. I'm like,
I've got murder porn to watch.
Yeah. And just porn. No. She's just like, her energy level is crazy. And she doesn't even drink like caffeine. She's just like up every morning at like 5:30 and like doing like kickbox. It blows my mind. I'm no coffee, nothing. Just like, she has so much energy.
Gross.
I know. What a monster.
What is wrong with her? She has changed. Yeah. do we have any final thoughts on the documentary? So you said, do you have any idea when or if it will be available for
people to see?
We'll post it online.
I cut together a little teaser. There's like a minute long teaser slash trailer for the film that you can watch online if you want to check it out. If you just Google like "What's Eating Ralphie May" teaser, it'll come up. But I think there's also a website like whatseatingralphiemay.com, and it's on the landing page of that. So if you want to just check out a clip, if you want to just see what it is that we're talking about. And but yeah, we'll continue to update you once we figure out where it's going.
Just out of curiosity, how did you get the title? Because I don't know if you guys remember a movie back in the day.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yes. And yes. The mom was obese.
So the title is actually my husband's idea.
Okay.
We were trying to think of a good title, and I was calling it 360 Degrees Down, which is a terrible word salad.
But it was a line in his interview.
What my favorite line he says in his interview, he has this like line that's basically like, at the top of the mountain, all there is just 360 degrees of ways down, which is like this crazy thing to, it was like an incredible, beautiful line, but also like really depressing and probably true. But so I felt like I wanted to call the film something to do with that, and I just couldn't come up with anything. And then our producer Marcy Hume was like, you know, you really need to name this something with his name in it. And my husband one night was like, "What's Eating Ralphie May?" And I just laughed so hard. But then of course I was like, I didn't take it seriously. I was like, that's hilarious. Oh my God. And then dropped. Wouldn't even begin to consider it. Cause like, I was just like, no, that's a joke. No. And then like 2 years later, we're still grasping at straws, trying to figure out a title. And I said to Marcy, I'm like, you know, speaking of like, she's like, it should be a clever title with his name. And I'm like, well, I was like, you know, my husband did throw out "What's Eating Ralphie May." And she was like, oh my God, that's perfect. We have to do that. And I'm like, I don't know. Is it mean? I couldn't decide. And then
did you go home and give your husband a blowjob?
I didn't.
The title helped, babe.
I guess throw on
some murder porn.
I guess I should.
Or regular porn. Yeah, it's your choice.
You're right. I should give him like a thank you.
Hands up.
He would rather have a back rub. Yeah, I'll give
what a loser.
He really likes rubs. He can jerk himself off. He can't rub his own back, you know.
Fair.
But
that's
Adam,
true.
Yeah, you want to weigh in?
That's true. That logic checks
She's
out.
Speaking in facts.
Yeah. Yeah. But it did. But then, you know, Lana was like, that's a fat joke. That's really mean. We're like, no, like she hard passed on that title. And then Marcy and I kind of pushed for it. And then it was a whole thing. But eventually, like, we kind of decided like that's the title. And I hope that nobody thinks it's cruel. It's not supposed to be a fat joke. To be honest, I think there's a line that Evan says where he's like, all comedians have something eating away at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's like,
yeah,
you know, what is like kind of poking this bear? And I think the title's brilliant. I love it. But I think it's catchy, and like it would give pause, which 360 degrees down with Ralphie May or whatever doesn't. But I worry a little that I don't want to piss off people, and like especially not like his friends and his fans. And I hope that people don't think it's like mean or a fat joke or whatever. I don't know. What do you think?
They alluded to his Twitter. I didn't read too much into it when I saw it, but I also thought it was a documentary about just following them around on the road. I didn't realize it was supposed to be about his weight loss journey. Mm-hmm. So at that point, the title made more sense to me. There, you showed his tweet, and it was from 2013, where, do you remember the tweet? It said something like, when I die, I hope people not make fun of me, but like, I hope
comics make jokes about
me. It's not sad. Like, I led a good life.
Right.
He really was blessed. He talks about being from a small, poor town in Arkansas, Clarksville, Arkansas. Yeah. And he goes, I'm so gracious to my fans because I wouldn't be here without them. But also, I wish somebody big would have visited my town when I was little. Like, I think it's awesome to visit as many towns as I can.
That's true. He was a comic. He had a really great sense of humor. I can't give credit to the comic who tweeted this because I can't remember who it was. But right after Ralphie died, somebody tweeted, like a friend of his, a comedian, tweeted like, wow, you just really never get over losing to Dat Fan. And I thought that was so fucking funny. And I'm like, Ralphie would have loved that joke and he would have appreciated that. And you're right. He did. Yeah. He tweeted out like, I hope people make jokes or whatever. Like, don't cry for me. My life is great or whatever. And
the craziest fat joke is the Mike Lawrence roast battle joke.
Oh my God.
In the documentary.
Mike Lawrence won roast battle that year.
He deserved to win roast battle with jokes like that. Writer. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I don't even want to spoil it. Watch the documentary when it comes out.
Watch the documentary. Yeah. Woof. Oh man. Yeah. Please watch the documentary when it comes out. And, you know, I welcome feedback from people who knew and loved Ralphie and were fans of his. I really did everything I could and busted my ass to make sure that it's an honest story that, just tells the truth of what happened. And, let me know I would love your feedback. Cause people are assuming that this is a film that's like shitting on Ralphie. And
no, it's definitely not.
I've worked very hard to make sure that that's not the case. And, but I welcome your feedback.
As someone who, again, knew who Ralphie May was, but didn't necessarily follow his comedy, I felt like a Ralphie May fan after.
That's beautiful. That's we had Ralphie's fan. We had like two like super fans of Ralphie's come to the Nashville, our world premiere in Nashville. And they had seen Ralphie like 35 times. They both had like Ralphie May shirts on afterwards and they loved the film. So I'm like, okay, that's the validation I need and love as the filmmaker to know that like this film is honest and it is good. And it's not this like one-sided like thing that people are thinking that it's going to be. And, but I worked very hard to keep it that way. And, I'm very proud of that.
You did a great job.
I agree.
It's a fantastic documentary.
Thank you very much.
I think that's our episode. Kat, thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam Todd Brown.
For talking to us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. This has been awesome. This is like kind of like a therapy session for me.
Yeah.
To talk about the film.
Well, as soon as I saw the screening, it did. I don't want to say it haunted me. It lingered. It stayed with me for days. It was Wednesday night was the screening. I recorded with Adam that Saturday and I was telling him about it. And I think we had talked a little bit in between. And so we started talking about how Adam, 6 degrees of Ralphie May, like how he was a part of that Wisconsin trip a little bit. And I was like, God, if you would love to come on, we would love to have you. It was a beautifully made documentary, but as a writer myself, like I'm always interested in the story, what makes people tick. I love the behind the scenes. That's why people like reality television. I like learning more about Ralphie May and his family.
Yeah.
They were a beautiful family
and it was beautifully made.
Well, thank you very much.
Agreed.
Well, thank you. Well, hopefully, I hope everyone can watch it soon.
Me too. And I hope you'll come back to talk about murder stuff or something sometime.
Oh, anytime. Oh, you guys talked about that. We can end the podcast and we'll talk about, there was that crazy murder. The chick who like, she killed herself or was she killed? And there was like, that she stabbed herself in the back in her neck.
Oh, Ellen Greenberg.
Yeah. Oh, look at your memory. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, we can talk about it later. But, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for doing it.
What was I supposed to do when you said,
pretty scary boo.
And I said, what am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to say it with her, duh.
Pretty scary boo.
Oh,
we say it together.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Let's do it.
Should we do it now?
Caitlin's here, but she
Caitlin's
doesn't
not
talk.
Talking.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so let's do it together.
Okay.
All right. Should we get out of here?
We should do like 1, 2, 3.
I'll say, hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Pretty Scary.
Pretty scary boo.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. Thank you.